And hello, hockey fans. Welcome back to the Hockey Writer Summer Preview. Mark Shagg back with you, and if you were with us last time, we had the great original pun master herself, Allison Lucan, join us. We had 10 questions that we desperately needed answers for, and she delivered in a big way. And, you know, we always like to get more opinions, so, you know, we end up bringing somebody on here. I had to bribe this guy a little bit more than I even had to do Allison here, but I have the great Rob Mixer with us. Rob, how you doing, man?
Hi, Mark. I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I just got done telling you, man, that Marco's pizza that I just had, I'm in food coma, so I don't know how I'm going to do this tonight.
I'm sure you can battle through.
Yeah.
You know what? I know you can.
I appreciate the words, man. Coming from you, I know I can do it now. That's exactly what I needed to hear, so it's perfect. So I got 10 burning questions here, and I wanted to get a foremost expert on the subject in yourself here, as I know that you've got wonderful answers for us because you know the fans are, they want to know this sort of stuff, and they're itching to hear the good news that you bring. You ready to do this?
I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Okay, so an interesting offseason. It doesn't even feel like it's been an offseason at this point. I mean, yes, the season ended in April, but gosh, it seems like just so many things have happened, and the big thing was the kind of out of the blue Brandon Saad trade. You know, saw four players go to Chicago, and of course we got Brandon Saad. So with that in mind, Rob, how much have the Blue Jackets closed the gap specifically on the Metro leaders like a Washington, like a Rangers, Islanders, Penguins, just based on what they've done in the offseason?
Yeah, you know, based just on that, I think everyone is tired of staying in the same spot they were a year ago. Not a whole lot. I mean, like, a lot has changed, but really nothing's changed in a way. Like, you know, Pittsburgh is still very much a high-power offensive team. They've added some depth, which I like. You know, Washington has a great defense. Their goaltending is good. Obviously, they have some firepower up front. You know, the Rangers have made two deep playoff runs. And, you know, but specifically speaking to the Blue Jackets, you know, like you're right. Saad is a big team. It's the kind of player that they've been looking for a long time. A guy that, you know, left shooting, left winger with skill and speed that can play with Ryan Johansson. And, you know, those kind of players don't come along that often, especially one that's 22 years old and looks to be just breaking through or scratch the surface of what he can do, and which sounds kind of crazy because he's got two Stanley Cups and has played with some world-class players and done some incredible things through his 3 or 4 years in the league. But you add in Dad and they add Gregory Campbell, who's going to be a nice piece in the bottom six that can do a lot of things for them. You know, it's August. It's hard telling until we get on the ice and start playing. But you like to think that they've closed the gap. You like to think that they've added some players that can help them and provide things that they need. You know, they scored a lot of goals last year and the year before, but you like to think that this Blue Jackets team is going to be, you know, quite a solid offensive group. And I just talked to Todd Richards last week about, you know, I said, if you look at your roster, and maybe this time a year ago, there were some things in flux, there were some pieces moving around, you didn't really know where this guy fit or that guy fit. I said, what's different now? And he said, we want to be, and have to be, a four-line team, because that's kind of where the league is going. So every line has to bring something. Every line's got to be able to chip in, you know, whether it's just getting the puck deep and, you know, making a smart play, or whether it's scoring a goal or, you know, anything like that. Every line's got to be in the game. So he feels like they've had, or now that they have, more depth than they've ever had. Mm-hmm. And he's excited about that. He feels like he's got, you know, 12, 13 forwards that he can mix around and create some good combinations with, but guess we'll find out in a month.
Yeah, we will. And I was telling Allison yesterday about, you know, trying to diagnose the Metro and how it might shake out. I actually think the Rangers will finish fifth. I've had time, a lot of time to sit and think about it. It seems like every other team, not the Rangers, has gotten better in some capacity. You know, Capitals, Penguins, Islanders, I mean, they're all real good teams. Rangers still a really good team, but it seems like they end up losing more than what they've gained. It'd just be really interesting to see how this whole thing shakes out, where it seems to me that they've definitely closed the gap and they may have even overtaken a team or two. But yeah, till we play the games on the ice, we certainly won't know, but it's definitely looking good.
Yep.
Wanted to switch over defensively a little bit here. You know, they made a big deal during the offseason, a big priority that they wanted to get somebody on the blue line, but, you know, fact remains that, you know, they didn't get anybody, no acquisitions.
Yeah.
So, is that just more of a... do they like what they have, or is it more, you know, they're a little bit disappointed that they weren't able to land somebody?
Well, you know what? I don't think they're disappointed that they didn't land somebody because they haven't not landed somebody yet. There's still some time before the season starts to see what shakes out, and there's still options available to them, and I don't think they've closed the door or anything yet. But, that being said, I get a strong sense, and actually a very strong sense, that if they were to go the training camp going into their first exhibition game, even in opening night, right now, with the group they have back there, they're fine with that. They believe in those young players back there, and they saw most, if not all of them, take very positive steps forward last season. I think Dalton Prout had a really good year the second half of the year. Kevin Kanaan had a hot streak when he first came on board, but he still got better at both ends of the ice as the year went on, and they still think there's more he can bring offensively and defensively back in the third end as well. Cody Goldust has a one-way deal now, so he's going to be here. And he played, I thought he played very well last year, down the stretch as well.
Yep.
You know, Ryan Murray, if he's healthy, and right now he is, he comes into camp, the top pairing defense, we think at worst, second pair is the number three guy. But he long-term, this is a top pairing guy. This is the slows the game down, that can flawlessly break the pocket of your own end, get you out of danger, and you know, that's the kind of player that you build your defense on. He's only 21 years old. He's really 22 in a few weeks now, but you know, Ryan Murray brings an element to defense that nobody else has back there, and it's calmness, it's collectiveness, it's brilliant hockey sense, and the Blue Jackets are just infatuated with that. And if he's in their lineup, and if he's healthy, which I believe he will be, and I think he'll be a really effective player for them, I don't see that there should be any issue with that group back there. Now, if they can add to it, they'd love to. They, you know, if it makes sense, they're kind of up against the cap. They're right around $4 million in space, something like that. So, if they can add somebody on a deal that works, the player that they like, then they'll do it. But right now, I think they're fine with this group. There's some good young players back there, like I said. And, you know, they're all in that 22 to 24, 25 range. Talking about the younger guys, not the veterans. But those guys, Prout, Goldust, Murray, Naughton, those, and don't forget, Smart, too, had a great year last year, and he's trying to be an even bigger player again. And, you know, I think this year, you know, this group is young and has some of the defensive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And it's just, I wonder with the, with this group coming back, though. I mean, yeah, another year of development's great, a healthy Ryan Murray, of course, and be really exciting to see. But, you know, fact remains, you know, they did give up a ton of shots last year. I think I counted, like, maybe in the neighborhood of, like, 12, 13 some odd games where they allowed 40 or more shots. So if we're getting the same D-core back, right, there's still time, of course, but assuming they come into training camp, what makes this year different? I mean, will it be more of the same? And, you know, why the confidence that that trend will be broken this year?
I think it's a couple of things. One, I think, you know, statistically, you're right, it was a poor year in terms of allowing shot attempts, and they were outshot many nights, which is troubling. But I think going back to the year before, when they were a pretty good possession team in the Blue Jackets from 2012-13 to 2013-14, had the second best Charlottetown's percentage improvement per game in the entire league. They were a really good puck possession team, really good defending team in 2013-14, and I think they took a step back last year for a variety of reasons. They're missing some guys, they had some guys not play very well. I think most of all, I think this is, it's kind of an anomaly when you see a team give up that many shots. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's very alarming. But I don't think it's a trend that is setting up to be problematic long term. I think the coaching staff has a good handle on what systematic changes need to be made in the way they play in their own zone, the way they go back for pucks and get pucked up. Those little detail things kind of got overlooked last year at times, because when you're 15-0-1, people don't really focus on the details so much. I mean, the coaches do. Well, I'm talking fans and media don't look at the details as much as they do at the end result, which was a pretty great run down the stretch. However, I think internal improvement and just recognizing and correcting mistakes, I think it's an undersold element of what these guys do. You know, they're great athletes, and they are where they are for a reason. So I think making changes to the way they play isn't so much an issue, or it won't stand in their way for making improvements, I guess is how I want to say it. But I think the best way for me to put it is that they're too good and too smart players back there on that group with a lot of potential, who have played big roles before in their junior careers. You know, in college hockey, Jack Johnson was a great college hockey player. Flora Tootin was a great junior hockey player. Ryan Murray had a great junior career playing the world as a 19-year-old. You know, these things are indicators these guys know and are capable of playing really, really solid defensive hockey. So, there's a fire truck coming through.
Yeah. I had a train earlier, so I hear you.
My windows are open.
Yeah.
These guys are capable players, Mark. And I think one of the things that they're going to look at right away is, and I know that they already have looked at, is those numbers you mentioned are ones that jump off the page when you look at them getting 34-36% of total shots in the 5-on-5. They weren't very good 5-on-5 last year any extended period of time. And this is a team that the year before, more than the same group of forwards, most of the same guys on defense, were a very good 5-on-5 team. So I think just some internal improvement, some tweaking, some video work will get them back where they need to be.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your assessment. I think there were just a lot of factors in play, especially when you look at injuries. Obviously, you got not only the missing players from their spots, but putting younger players or maybe not as developed players in spots they might not be used to. So, I don't think that that's an issue, but it still will be interesting to see, you know, especially with the forward group the way that it is now, too. I mean, if you got the puck, then they can't shoot the puck. So, well, hopefully it works out that way.
Right. And one of the changes they're going to, not changes, one of the things they're going to need to look at and get better at is how the Blue Jackets in their own zone go back for pucks and get into the hands of their forwards and get up the ice and attack quicker, more efficiently, more crisply. They struggled mightily with that at times last year. They weren't able to break the puck out, and they weren't able to get up in transition, and then, you know, they had to make some tweaks and have their forward swing lower and support the puck on the breakout. So you're kind of robbing yourself of numbers up the ice, but it's something that your forwards have to do to come back and support the puck to make sure that you're getting out of your own end faster. And I think the defensemen this year have some steps to take in that regard and getting the puck out of their own end, up in transition, in the hands of their forwards, because they want to score, they want to attack, and they have the horses to do that. But if they don't have the puck at the right time, the speed, the neutral zone, that's going to be a problem.
That's for sure. No, definitely a good point on that. And Want to switch gears a little bit with you here and look at goaltending. Obviously, when you talk Blue Jackets goaltending, you've got Bobrovsky, and the reports that I'm seeing out there indicating, you know, the new workout that he's doing and that he's getting bigger and stronger. I mean, it's all very encouraging, but I took a look back to last year a little bit, and, you know, now he's got the new contract underway. Only Henrik Lundqvist gets more money than Bobrovsky now when it comes to how much he makes a year. Didn't have the greatest year. I mean, he had obviously a really good stretch at the end of the year, had some injuries as well, but his goals against and his save percentage were not that good. I think even 30th or worse in both categories. So what made, you know, just give everybody a sense, you know, what makes him the second highest paid goaltender in the league? You know, what does he do in which he is just so good, even though the numbers might not indicate it?
Well, he can steal games, and he's done that many, many times. There have been several games the last two and a half years where the Blue Jackets might not have had any business at all being in the game, or let alone getting 2 points out of the game. But their goalie gave him that chance. And they know, I've talked to Todd Richards and some of the guys who are back in town now, and they know full well that they cannot make life difficult for Bob. They can't.
Right.
They did that last year, and, you know, he probably had more of a workload last year in terms of shots. And, I think, too, like you said, those two injuries really hindered him. Like, this is a guy that's a practice scene, he's a workout scene. Like, we always joke, don't know where Bob is, he's probably on the bike.
Yeah.
And that's at home or on the road. If you can't find him, he's probably on the bike. This guy is so committed to his routine and committed to being the best that if you take it out of that routine, you know, it's not dangerous, is not the word, but it's troubling because that's what he's used to. That's
right.
It's his routine. It's just how he prepares himself to be the best. And he is so committed to being the best. And, what makes him the second highest paid goalie in the league is that he is a guy who went on top of his game and can steal games for the Blue Jackets. And, you know, I can't even pinpoint 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games because there have been so many of them. So they haven't had their best stuff up front or on the fence, but the guy back there between the pipes does his job. And whether it's getting 1 point out of the game where they probably didn't have a chance to get any, or whether they get 2 out of the game where they probably should have had 1 or 0, it's happened far too many times to count. And he's, you know, I saw Ian Clark a few weeks ago and I asked him about Bob and his eyes lit up because he spent some time with him over in Russia this year working with Bob and some other goalies. And Bob's kind of changed up his workout routine a bit, done some different things, and what Ian Clark said was bigger, faster, and stronger. And, you know, Ian Clark is a guy that holds Sergei Bobrovsky in the very highest regard. He said he's the hardest working goalie he's ever seen. And, you know, the changes that they've made in his game from when he came here 3 years ago. When Bob got here 3 years ago, Ian Clark told me it was last year that he struggled so mightily finding pucks in traffic because he was so used to playing a crouch, playing low the ice and picking up pucks in the last minute that he wasn't really concerned with peering over traffic and through traffic and around bodies and fit and trying to find a puck on its way in. And they worked hard at that. Him finding pucks through traffic. He's not the tallest guy. He's 6'1", 6'2", and you see a lot of goalies now, they're 6'4", 6'5", 6'7". You know, he's not, by those standards, not the tallest goalie in the world, but he finds a way to find pucks, and he's so athletic and quick that he can make saves that these other guys can't. Long story short, he does things that not many other goalies in the world can do, on top of being able to steal games. And without that guy, the Blue Jackets are a mightily different team. And it's a really good thing, a really confident presence for them back there when he's in net and on top of this game. Is it, they play so freely and they play so confident when he's doing the things that he can do. And it's a game changer.
Yeah. No, it's well said. I know I've seen a lot of external sources indicate that they shouldn't be paying goalies as much as good, but they're the ultimate game changer, and I completely agree with the assessment, especially if he's going to get bigger, if he's going to get faster in the routine. And I can vouch for what you're saying. I mean, you see him a lot more than many of us do. When I was in Buffalo last year for opening night, I go downstairs, and what first thing I see when I get down to the room, Bobrovsky outside the room on the bike. I mean, it's amazing to see that he's so committed to that, and you know, I think that it filters onto other players. It's really good to see. And fans, you know, there needs to be an understanding that's the way he is. He is so committed to winning, and at the same time, just think about how he ends his seasons too. I mean, the numbers he's compiled in the last couple Marches and Aprils, I mean, have been just staggering, and that's a testament to his work ethic and what he puts into it, that he can be that dominant when the games matter even more. So that's got to be really good news for everybody.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird, and I've read some of the things you referred to about people saying that you can get quality goaltending for less money. Probably true sometimes in some cases, but it's kind of like saying that in baseball you shouldn't pay for pitching.
Right.
I mean, you win with pitching. You know, like, offense is great, but if you're giving up 6, 7, 8 runs a game, it doesn't matter.
No.
And I think if you have elite goaltending, and the Blue Jackets think they do, then you're already a step ahead.
Exactly right. Rob Mixer from the Blue Jackets joining us here, and just wanted to switch over, as you know, a lot of fans are interested in this one, especially with the forward unit now, when you add a Brandon Saad to this top nine that just looks to me like potentially one of the best top nines, not only in the Eastern Conference, but in the entire league. And, you know, Coach Richards definitely has some options at this point. But we wanted to get your sense of how you might think that might look on opening night. And then also we wanted to kind of get a sense that right side on the top line, you know, Cam Atkinson's a right winger, and, you know, makes sense that he could be there. But, you know, they could put Nick Foligno on his off wing, you know, because of the chemistry he has with Johansson. So we wanted to see, where do you fit in on who plays on that top line on the right side?
Good question. If I'm going with it today, I'm going with Cam Atkinson. I think his presence on that right side with speed and his goal scoring ability is a good fit for Brandon Saad, who plays with speed, likes to have the puck, can control the puck, can find guys in open ice, and he's a guy that obviously commands a lot of attention on the ice. So you think that's a little more room for a guy like Cam Atkinson, who's shifty and who finds the quiet ice to score goals. You know, I know for a fact that, you know, I talked to Ryan Johansson about this last year when he was up playing with him towards the end of the season, and I said, what do you like about playing with Cam? What makes that tandem work? And he, summarizing, I guess, said that he knows that Cam likes to shoot the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that Cam has to shoot the puck early and often. And when Cam's doing that early in games, first, second, third shifts, first period, getting shot attempts, he's making an impact, then that kind of revs him up for the rest of the game. And it gets him involved, and it gets Johansson involved, looking for plays and shooting the puck himself. And they play off each other really well. So I think that is, right now, I'd say that's the likely option, and then you put Nick Foligno on the second line, which is not the worst in the world. It gives you some solid balance and some offense on the second line as well, with Brandon Dubinsky most likely probably doing Jenner on the other side. I think Atkinson is right now the logical choice to be on that top line on the right side. It may not be how they open camp. They might try some different options there. And Todd Richards usually does. He usually has to show three or four guys there and see if there's some kind of, I don't know, under the radar option that works. But I think at the end of the day, Friday, October 9th, we'll see Kim Atkins on the right side with Todd and Trent.
I agree with you on that for sure. In fact, I wanted to know if you heard the interview we recently had with Matt Sitkoff of NHL.com. We were previewing fantasy, and he ended up calling Cam Atkinson the number one sleeper in all of hockey.
Wow.
That's a pretty bold statement to make there when you can have somebody like that.
For sure.
Think if he gets the power play time, if he gets the top line minutes, I mean, he can, and he's a streaky scorer. I mean, he, for a while, could not buy a goal, but then in March, I think, he didn't score in the Devils game, but it was after that, he was on a tear. And that's pretty much what we can expect to see from him, you know, especially if he can get it rolling early, like you mentioned. I definitely think Atkinson will be on the right side. It's a natural thing, but you're right. They could obviously start. I mean, when you have that kind of talent, you can experiment with a few things and, you know, see where the chemistry might be. And we haven't even talked about, like, the magic of Wennberg and Hartnell. I mean, that's how deep this team is. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you think putting Foligno on the top line on the right side is quote-unquote loading up the top line, the counter to that is, all right, well, you have Cam Atkinson, who scored 20-plus goals again last year on your second line. So I'd call that loading up, too. Right. So it kind of works both ways.
It really does, for sure, no matter how it works out. I wanted to, Ryan Murray, obviously we talked about his injuries. It's pretty well documented there. But another guy, and we talked about him here just a little bit ago, his name was mentioned as being on the top six, is Boone Jenner. And, you know, he did miss pretty good amount of time last year. One was kind of freaky, but then he had a stress fracture in his back, and it's his free agent year this year. He becomes a restricted free agent after the season. So, one to get your take just for Boone Jenner. How big is this season for him? I mean, we pretty much understand that the Blue Jackets view him as a long-term piece, but just how big is this season for him in terms of his development, in terms of maybe that next contract?
I think those points are valid, but most importantly, I think it's a big year for him personally because he was so disappointed and bummed out by how his season went last year.
Mm.
You know, he was, if you recall, he opened training camp at center and showed some good things there, and Todd Richards really liked what he was doing. Then they moved into the wing to start the year, and all of a sudden, he turned again. He's got the stress fracture in his back, and things never really gained traction for him last year, and it's a bummer because he's an excellent young player. He's only 22 years old, and he's got such a bright future ahead of him because he plays a style that every team hates to play against. It's not like he's a grinder or a physical bottom six player. This is a kid that scored 45 goals last year in junior hockey and was arguably the Blue Jackets' best player in the playoffs two years ago. Every time he was on the ice, he made an impact. And everybody on the Pittsburgh Penguins knew where 38 was every time he hopped over the board. So, like I said, I think for him personally, it's a big year. Free agency aside, just getting himself back on track. And, he's a top six player. Whether that's as a left winger or a center, we'll see. For now, he's probably going to be a winger, and what he can bring with really anyone he plays with, hard-nosed player, goes in the areas that are difficult to get pucks out, hang on to the puck, can make plays with the puck, score goals. He's a guy that you win with. He's a guy that can make a difference. I don't think the contract part will be much of an issue. I think as you said, seeing him exclusively as a long-term part of their plan, and for him, this should be. I thought his playoff was a coming out party, but this season, if he's healthy and raring to go, which he is, I think this year could be even more explosive for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's Yeah, it seems like that he's clearly a fan favorite as well, that he, you know, brings a certain level of intensity and energy, not only to the fans, but to the team, and he's going to be around for, you know, hopefully a long time for sure. It'll be great to see what he does. Now, someone else who's new to the, well, he came in, you know, kind of in the middle of last year, middle, end of last year, you know, in the trade that we, with Nathan Horton, we got David Clarkson, so... Great reports so far. I mean, he's gotten involved in the community and has really been really good in that sense to start out with. But in terms of on the ice, what can the fans expect to see in terms of how they'll use him and, you know, goals and assists wise? Like, what can we honestly expect? You know, contract aside, I mean, it's a different situation, but just what can we honestly expect to see from David Clarkson this year?
You know, To be honest, Mark, I don't really know. And I don't think that's a bad thing either. I think this is a guy that's extremely motivated. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, you know, he's already gotten involved in the community here and, you know, talking with some of the people that I know that covered him in Toronto, and that's just the kind of person David Clarkson is. He would have done this if he was in Columbus. He would have done this if he was in Edmonton or Toronto or Pittsburgh, anywhere. It's just the kind of guy he is. What he believes in. But on the ice, you know, you talk to him and he's just so, he's itching and wants to get back out there. And, you know, gosh, he played one or two shifts after he was trained a year, and trained as a week, and then he played the next game and then he was out the rest of the year. You know, it's horrid luck. But, you know, I think that the Blue Jackets are going into this with an open mind because they don't really want to peg him anywhere and say, okay, he's a third-line player, he's a second-line player, he's a this, that, here. They want to see what works, and they're going to try him in different places up and down the lineup in training camp. He's probably a right winger exclusively. That's where he's played most of his career. And they still think and strongly believe that David Clarkson can be a solid player for them and can make a difference and can do some things that can help them win. And I know from talking to the guy that he really wants to make that happen. So, you know, I'm cheering for him, you know, because he's a heck of a guy. Mm-hmm. He's been a great asset to us. And, you know, a short time he's been here, and that's the kind of guy that you want to see have success and get back on track. And I think he will do well. I think expectations should kind of be put on ice. No pun intended, because he's kind of getting himself back up on his feet. You know, at the top end of last year, he had a tough year back when he was in Toronto. So I think with the right line mates, and if you had to, you know, if I had to project it today, why not try him with Miles Funberg and Scotty Hartnell? Nice. See what those three can do. So that'd be my projection. I don't know if that's where they'll end up or where they'll, where they'll start. But why not? You know, I think there's plenty of options, and that goes for every line, one through four. But I'm really interested to see how they use David Clarkson, because he can play on the power play. He can play 5-on-5. He's got a lot of energy. And, you know, he's a really good leader. He's a really good voice in the room for those young guys. And, you know, I know from talking to guys here that they look up to him because he's just a good guy. And he's played in this league a long time. He's been to the Stanley Cup final. So he's an interesting player to watch. Put it that way, I think he'll be a good fit.
Yeah, that's for sure. The one thing that kind of came to me as soon as he left Toronto was he ended up leaving just a pressure cooker. I mean, that's just the market that Toronto is.
Yeah, and yeah.
You know, when you have some, when you have that pressure finally taken off, where you feel like that you can just, you know, kind of go out there, be yourself, and not having to face constant scrutiny, you know, right off the bat, that's an advantage. And, you know, I think he's going to fit right in very nicely. I mean, it's obviously very hard to pinpoint what exactly we're going to get from him, because they don't know exactly how they're going to use him yet, or we don't know how they're going to use him yet, but it certainly would not be surprising. I mean, will he get the 30 goals like he did as a New Jersey Devil? Well, that's a tough one, but could he score 15, 20 goals? You know, It's quite possible. Sure.
Why not?
Can't rule it exactly. Can't rule that out at all. I mean, he will be one of the more interesting and fascinating players to watch for sure. Got a couple more here for Rob Mixer from the Blue Jackets. Want to talk about the prospects a little bit. I mean, I can't remember a time, honestly, in the franchise's history in which not only is the NHL roster looking really good, but so is the AHL. I mean, we look at guys like Kirby Reichel and Sonny Milano, Oliver Bjorkstrand, all could potentially start in Lake Erie this year, and they'll even have a chance in training camp to make a real impression here. So we wanted to ask you, if you were a betting man, if you had your Magic 8-Ball out right now, which one of those players would be the first one to the Blue Jackets, whether it be out of training camp or whether it be via a call-up?
I'm going to go with Oliver Bjorkstrand. I think it's a pretty tight race. A lot of the guys are right in the same area as far as their development and how close they are to the NHL, but the Blue Jackets are in, right now, a really good spot where they can let these guys play in Cleveland. They can let them develop and play big minutes down, or up there and, get used to what it's like to play a top six role in pro hockey. Now, it's going to be different, obviously, from the American League to the NHL, but that experience of playing 19, 20, 21 minutes a night, power play, penalty kill, late game situations, and then all of that in Cleveland. So that's a pretty good scenario for the Blue Jackets, that they have the ability to give these guys the ice time that they need to take the next step in their careers. If I had to pick one to make the jump first, I'd say it's Ollie. He's got all the tools. He's got a great skater. He's strong on the puck, getting stronger. He's gotten stronger the last, two or three years. He's trained hard off the ice. He's worked out here in Columbus. He had a really good year last year in Traverse City, or a really good week, I should say. And I expect to do the same again this year. He's a guy that I see, too. And, I've been asked about this in mailbags and stuff like that. But I think he and Sonny Milano can and will make management's life pretty difficult toward the end of camp. I think they're going to give them some tough decisions. Obviously, if you look on paper, you would like to think that, with 12 to 14 NHL forwards, that part's pretty much set. But as we said time and again, if a young player makes the team, if he's playing the lead, it's not going to hold him back. We're going to make room for him. So that may not be right out of camp. It might not be early in the season, but midway through the year, or if there's injury and something happens where a player gets called up for it, they call up a drug channel, those young guys will be the first one.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm with you, too. I mean, I'm agreeing with everything that you're saying, and I'm not just doing that.
I like your style,
Well, hey, I mean, when you're given good answers, it's easy to do. I mean, I look at it kind of in the sense for Bjorkstrand that I think of the three, he's the only natural right winger. And when you look at the left wing on the Blue Jackets right now, you have Saad, you have Foligno if he plays over there, you have Hartnell, you have Calvert. You already have four left wingers. And you would expect that those four would make the team. If you look over to the right side, I mean, you have Cam Atkinson. I mean, you probably are playing a Boone Jenner on the second line, and you're playing, like I said, Clarkson or Rene Bork. And if Bjorkstrand has that big camp, it would not surprise me at all. He definitely has the tools for sure, and I cannot wait to see how it translates to the NHL. I mean, I know everyone talks about the size a little bit, but he more than makes up for that. I mean, he's going to be incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I want to talk about Coach for a minute here. Last few years, I mean, it's well documented that the Blue Jackets have had really slow starts, for whatever reason, injuries last year, whatever reason. And now this is a big year for them, because they have a pretty decent roster and a chance to, make a statement. So we wanted to get your take on just how much pressure do you feel like he's on this year to win, especially trying to avoid that slow start? But, what if the team misses out on the playoffs again? I mean, is there an extra sense of pressure for him to be able to get this team winning?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I mean, there's always pressure, right?
Right.
So sports, you know, the job is not to get posed and create excitement. It's not why you're employed. Your job is to win. Nobody wants to win more in Columbus than that guy. You know, he's itching. You know, he's so hungry for this team to take the next step and get over the hump. And he really believes that this group is really, really close. If not right there, ready to break through, ready to make some noise. And, they've made some significant strides and improvements under his guidance the last 2 or 3 years. You know, he's a steady presence, a steady voice. He's got their attention. I think he's one of the top young coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 48 years old. He's got a long career ahead of him. And if he can get this group over the hump, maybe deep in the playoffs, you know, it won't be a surprise to many people that I thought. There's a lot of people around the league believe that Todd Richards is a really, really good head coach, and one that had, you know, in 2013-14, you know, he saw a lot of national media, both in Pittsburgh and Columbus, during that playoff run, and every single one said, man, this guy's done a heck of a job. Structurally, philosophically, you know, the way they play, the way they play for each other, the way they play hard, play with structure. A lot of people have been impressed by that. Obviously, last year was disappointing for everyone, and Todd's the first guy to not use the injury thing as a excuse. He believes that he believes in his guys. He believes that the players that were in the lineup were able to get the job done, and were able to win games, and for a reason, it didn't happen. So this year, yes, there's pressure on him. There's pressure on everyone today, because on paper, this is the best the Blue Jackets have been in quite a while. So I think he's going to have them ready to go. I think these guys are smart. I think they're professional enough to understand what he's changed from last year and the year before this year, because they cannot afford to start 5-10. They're 5-11-2, or whatever it was two or three years ago. They got to get off to the start. You think last year, sure, they were 4-2-0, but they were playing that well. You know, they were forced to win in 6 games with one that they absolutely stole in San Jose in the final minute, when they were pretty much outplayed for most of the second half of the game. I think the first period was, you know, pretty much all San Jose, and they got the 2 goals in the second period, and fought back to tie it late in the third, and then scored with, I think, 20 seconds left in regulation to win. But they didn't play all that well at the start last year, and some bad habits caught up to them. As with some injuries, they got hit hard by injuries in November and December. I think that was kind of the worst of the worst there. But back to your point, I asked him point blank today, I said, your expectations changed. He said, absolutely not. He said, your expectations to win. That's it. So that's kind of the approach they're taking is, they're kind of going to punt on all the excuses and all the other noise and just try and win games.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people, too, I mean, yeah, in the playoffs, he definitely got the attention, but it seems that he's done a lot of stuff under the radar, too, where he is really good, and he's been with some really good coaches. And now I wrote about him a while back, just looking back at his history. Outside of the time he spent in Minnesota, he's been a winner everywhere. And since then, he's gotten so much better. I mean, the time he spent in the Olympics, and, you know, he's been with Dan Bylsma a lot, and obviously the success that he's had. So he's been around winners, and it just seems like that he's slowly bringing a winning culture to this team. You know, something that's been desperately needed for many years, and he's slowly bringing it in. He's definitely got the experience to do it. So it would not surprise me at all to see him potentially be talked about as a Coach of the Year candidate, you know, as, you know, more people catch on to what he's doing. I mean, it's been really good.
Yeah, the job he did at the World Championship, the American team, got lots of people talking to. I got respect, you know, from friends in the league, and like that American team did some really impressive things, and your guy was in charge, so he must be doing something right. But, I think that performance by the U.S. at the World Championship back in May, that got the attention of a lot of people as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I was shocked the U.S. got a medal, but maybe we shouldn't have been. I mean, this the way he handled it for sure. So, yeah, Rob Mixer here. We got one final question for him, and you know, with everything that we've talked about and all things considered, time for a prediction on the season. So, Rob, who do you got? How do you think they do? How many points do you think they finish? And you know, where do you think they fit in the playoff picture in the Metropolitan Division?
I think they're second in the Metropolitan Division. They're Washington Capitals. I think they're right around 102, 103 points, maybe somewhere there. And I won't give you a playoff prediction because I want to make it first, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Well, you're even more bullish than I am. I thought I was being bullish at 100 points, but now I say 47 wins. 100 points. I mean, they were a winning team last year. I mean, given how many man games that they lost and everything that they went through, they won 42 games last year. To have them win 5-6 more games with that kind of roster is definitely not unreasonable at all. And hopefully we didn't jinx them at all, but the elements are certainly there. And we can't wait to get this started. Rob, it's been a pleasure having you on, you know, answering these questions for us, and we greatly appreciate your time, and thank you.
Mark, anytime, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And fans, thanks for joining us here, and we got more previews coming on, so stay tuned in the coming weeks as we continue to count down toward the beginning of the regular season.